Losers.
I don't think a lot of people understood that when KZLA turned itself out, when they went away from country. Because I was working at a pretty sizable country station, and everybody kind of went, wait a minute, so who's country? You know, like, well, I don't get it. Why would they do that? The share was good enough. Whatever. Yeah, I think there was a lot of confusion in the world when that happened.
Yeah, they never loved country. They never loved it. Emmis, Jimmy never loved. They never loved. They always wanted to do something else with that 93.9 signal. And they had this idea for moving. Jimmy told me straight up, we've invented a new format. I go, no, you didn't. It's the female jack. And when they launched it, I remember I was going through the music. I forgot what the program we were using, you know. They had 150 songs. And he's like, make music promos and this and that. I go, Jimmy, where's the rest of the music? Oh, this is the music. I go, you're going to try to launch this sucker with 150 songs? If this is going to be a move-in, which is a female jack, it should be 1,000 mm-hmm. at least. You're playing mm-hmm. songs that were hits in the 80s. And, you know, he started doing, you know, his idea of imaging was like, you know, I want it to sound bigger, bigger, bigger. He kept saying bigger. I'm like, I was making it as big as I could, dude. I didn't know what else to do. You know what? He was trying to tell me it needed more compression. I'm like, Jimmy, you've been in this business that long and you don't know what compression is? The word compression? Mm-hmm. He wanted it compressed. And, you know, I sat in his office the day I quit and I said, man, I laid it out for him. I figured I got nothing to lose. Shorebus is making more money than I'm making here. So, you know, I'm just going to tell him what I think because I don't plan on walking back in this radio station door. And I told him, and I didn't tell him because I was being mean. I told him because I've been in the business a long time at this point. Jimmy's been in it a long time, longer. And I respect him. And I think he needed to hear it because I'm like, man, the way you're handling me is not the way you handle an imaging director or an employee for that matter. You know, I remember on a Friday he goes, we're giving away $50,000 Monday. I need a promo. I go, when did you decide this? We just decided it. I go, you just figured out on Friday night, I was already home, that you're going to give mm-hmm. away $50,000 starting Monday. I think you've been talking about it. You're just dropping it on me. Then I cut the promo and he goes, no, redo it. I'm like, hey man, I'm cutting it on a Saturday. I'm not redoing it. You know, I do shit right the first time. It sounds great. And he didn't know what the sound in his head was and he couldn't tell me. He'd go, I don't know how to word it. I'm like, then figure out how to word it and call me. Because if you can't tell me what you want, I can't make it. And I'm not going to make stuff and make it wrong because you can't word it. And we really so, had it out.
How did he react when you had your, you know, final interview chat?
He just sat there and he kind of went back with me a little bit, but I think he just sat there and let me vent. And then he said, listen, man, I wish you good luck. Good luck on everything. And bye. And then I went back to visit one time and he shut his door. Because I know, because moving had failed and they lost a ton of money. And he knew, because I told him before I left, I remember I said, dude, moving's going to fail. You're not playing enough songs. You're strangling. And this is when me and Rick Dees got reunited. He loved me.
I was going to say, they launched that with, and they anchored mornings with Rick. They kind of brought him back to mornings in LA with that station, right?
That's right. And Rick, yeah. When Rick knew I was there, he came right in my studio and said, oh my God, this is great. I made all this stuff. Jimmy would come in and go, remake it, make it, do this, do that, change that. I'm like, well, let me ask Rick. No, don't just do it. Then I'd remake it. And then I, you know, Rick could hear it in rehearsal because they were rehearsing before the station, the morning show launched after the station did. Rick would come in and go, why is this changed? I said, Jimmy told me to do it. He'd march out. So Jimmy wouldn't tell Rick it needs to be redone. He'd tell me. So I was in between. And I told him, I go, this is not the way this rolls, guys.
Man, you know how many markets that happens in, though? How many situations where you've got the, you know, the monster morning talent and the PD who can't do any wrong, but they don't really talk to each other?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
And
that's crazy.
It is crazy. But, you know, it probably happens in a lot of markets. But when you're in LA, you figure by that point,
you got to stow that shit, yeah.
This is the level of talent where they know better than to play that game, and everybody's above it, and we're here to win. We're not here to sabotage each other. And that's what went down, man. And I, you know, listen, I'm not going to sit and say Jimmy Steele's a bad guy. I think Jimmy Steele's a good guy. I had a lot of great conversations and good times with that guy, and he got me out of a job that I didn't want to be in. But the end, how it ended, was just not good. And I think they made a huge mistake, and I think they know it. And I'm 100% positive that, you know, Jimmy doesn't want to see my face because I point at him and tell him, dude, I told you so.
What happened to moving? I forget, actually. I stopped paying attention, or maybe I just forget after it flipped again.
Yeah, it's now Spanish.
Oh, that's why I don't
They've
know.
Leased okay. it to a Hispanic company.
Dude, they just leased it out. Wow, they couldn't make money on it with a different...
They were making money with KZLA. I don't know why they touched it.
I don't know why they opened up that country genre. I don't understand that. I mean, I get it. It's not going to lead the market ever. That's not a market that country will ever dominate in, but you're still going to earn money on it, and you're the only player. No one's going to launch a competitor if you've got the country format.
That's right. And then Go Country signs on the air, and they're kicking ass.
Of course they do. They have a lesser signal.
And they beat Power in a book. So, you know, listen, it's kind of like... K-Rock. K-Rock doesn't always have great music, meaning the artists aren't always popping out hits. There's times when the alternative rock's just not kicking it. Well, you know, and before what the guy that built the station was before Weatherly, the guy that hired all those jocks and put that thing and put Frost in place. That's all before Weatherly. That's the guy that went to MTV. I don't know his name.
You're talking about K-Karaoke?
Yeah. Who was the PD before Weatherly? That hired Jed the Fish and Sluggo and John Frost. That was like early 80s. I think Frost got there in 87. Damn. That's before Weatherly.
There's a guy named Trip that hired me somewhere.
Trip Reeb.
I don't think it was Trip. Yeah. I was talking to him the other day. He actually hired me for something he was consulting on. He's one of the coolest guys I've ever talked to.
Yeah. GM. GM of KR. He's a great guy.
He was the GM. I didn't exactly. Anyway, but small world.
It is. And getting smaller, brother. Getting smaller.
I knew you'd have some stories. I should have talked to you sooner. I mean, I'm glad we talk now because I like honesty.
I don't hold back. I'm not gonna, you know, there are people I just don't like flat out, but you know, I can't say a bad thing about some people, even if things didn't end well. You know, sometimes things don't end well. And
let me try and fire off now some. I mean, we've heard some great stories, and this is going to be one of the longer episodes. But you can hang on for a while, right? You can keep talking,
dude. I'm here.
Yeah, good. That'll be good. People are going to enjoy it. Okay, you get into short bus days. Before I get into the real specifics of that, I don't want to. In listening to you and knowing you and hearing about you, I know that I don't want to use the word ego, but you definitely think highly of yourself, and that's good.
Oh, you know, no, oh, bro, saying, really? Do I come across that way? Yeah. Oh, I don't think I've never thought I've always thought it was more than the more grounded people. I guess maybe I don't feel like I have an ego that is, I feel like I'm better than people.
You have a warrant, you know, you have a good self.
I have confidence.
But I'm, yeah, very confident, and I'm not saying anything negative, but I think that it's, you know, you definitely come off like you're confident, and that's good. My point is, have you ever found that, you know, because there's the opposite of that. There's guys in your seat in different markets that are kind of those, you know, don't talk too much, just stay in the corner and do what I'm told. You know, I do great work.
There's a bomb in the trunk of my car, a body.
Perhaps a head in the freezer. Right. So have you ever stepped back and sort of thought, you know, some of these situations might have been avoided if you had been a little more of that guy? Or you have zero regrets and you're glad you're the way you are and you're glad you're confrontational with, like, a Jimmy Steele or the like?
No, I wouldn't change a thing. I have no regrets. I got to those gigs because I was confident. I think all those guys hired me because they wanted somebody who knew what they were doing. RJ, for sure. RJ was like, man, I don't want to worry about this department, dude. You're in there. Now I can go focus on these fool jocks and what they're doing. And you know, I was there 5 years. That guy only came in twice. And man, it was country, bro. I was putting some weird stuff on. Only twice he'd come in and go, you know? And that was it. Twice. And both times, believe me, I sat by the door going, promo just rolled. RJ in 5, 4, 3, and he'd come in the door. You know, like that guy from Office Space. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you think that you take critique well, though, when it was given to you?
Absolutely.
And how would one, because this is something I see people have a problem with. You know, you'll get the email from a young producer saying, hey, man, here's my stuff. I'd love to hear what you think about it. And I'm never going to be the guy. I'll always reply to people, but I'm never going to just say, awesome, dude, keep doing it. You know, I'm always going to give you negative critique where it's needed because that's what I want. And how are ways that you have taken that, you know, for yourself to make yourself better? And what's your advice for people to take negative critique properly and use it to your advantage?
Well, you know, I think the best thing you can do, you know, when somebody's giving you a critique is to step back and try to figure out, you know, what you're, what you've made and what's the purpose of it and what this person's trying to tell you. And here's why. You got to decide whether this critique is useful and is worthy or whether it's not. There's people who will give you critiques. You're like, whatever, dude, your stuff is not even good. You're telling me. But then there's guys who tell you things and they're really freaking good. And you're like, yeah, man, maybe I'll give this a shot. Radio is a thing where we all have the ability to be in the laboratory before we put it out in front of the public. We're in our little studios mixing stuff. So if you get a critique from somebody, my advice is absolutely just apply it while you're doing something and see how it rolls. Because the thing is, you never know what kind of trick or what kind of new little idea or little secret little concept is going to spark in your head and send you a new direction. So I say always give it a try. Doesn't hurt to give it a try, yeah. Man.
What about for those that you know, the times you have the notion that literally the boss is telling you to do something that you know to be wrong? You know, how do you, where's the difference between, okay, just do it because they're the one paying your check, or I have, you know, creative artistic integrity and I want to do it the way I want to do it because I know it's right.
I was very lucky in my career that I had not too many people tell me that I was off. And when they did, I would always just usually say, man, you're way off. I'm doing it your way, but you're way off. And if this comes back, I'm pointing at you, bro. I would tell you what, I had no problem addressing blame. If it was me, I would absolutely take it. But if it was somebody else, boy, I let you know. You told me to do it, fool. I did it. Didn't work out. You're the man. Step up.
Do you think that in, you know, nowadays it's a different world? I mean, people aren't getting paid, you know, 160K plus to go image a station or two in any market.
Right.
And nowadays people are just barely hanging on to jobs. Do you think that people still have the wherewithal, the opportunity or if there are opportunities for people to still kind of have that confidence in your work? Or do you think the market has basically told people, you're going to do what we damn well say and you're going to do it for minimum wage?
No, I think the market is still, you can have confidence in yourself and your work. Listen, think about it like you're dating a chick. When you're with a chick and she's just super confident, knows what she's doing, she can take you or leave you. You want her more. And when you got some chick who's like, oh, I'm just at your feet and I love you so much and I can't ever lose you. You don't care. You're cheating on her. You're banging her friend.
Those are the ones that get cheated on, yeah.
That's exactly right. And listen, when you come in there and you know what you're doing, you're confident in what you're doing, and you got some experience behind you and you got the wherewithal to go knock it out of the park, they want you, man, and they don't want to lose you. And there's a way to be confident and not be cocky. There's a way to be confrontational and not just, not just completely offend people. You know, I confronted RJ often, and never did I go in there and tell him he was wrong and blah, blah, blah. I'd go, come on, dude, this. We would talk like people.
Yeah.
And I would throw out my opinion. And if he disagreed, he'd go, no, because this. And I would have to, you know, take it and move on. And, you know, you have to know what battles to fight and what battles to keep your mouth shut. You know, believe me, every time we had to do something for Disney, it sucked. They would send us the copy and they wanted light music under it. And I told RJ, go, man, this sucks. He goes, hey, this is a sales thing. He goes, here's what I think you do. He goes, go in there, put a music bed under it, have Brian read it. And he goes, put it on the air and go home. Because what can we do?
Now you've gone on, you know, a business owner, you're managing a staff, you have a service where you want lots of clients, and you're obviously, you've proven here, you're the guy who's going to say what your opinion is. You know, you have your thoughts, they are what they are. If you think someone else is wrong, you're going to make it clear. Have you stumbled into times where having that attitude in this industry, not saying as a person, but in this industry, has caused you any problems or has helped you more than it hurt you?
I think it's helped me more than it's hurt me, but definitely I've had to bite my tongue often. And there's been times I've rubbed people wrong or pushed them back a bit. Yeah. Especially when you get into syndication, you're dealing with, you know, people who are under a lot of stress, have quotas to meet with, you know, whatever they're selling, and people who have, you know, a much bigger agenda than just me, you know, with Dial Global. They got a lot going on. And, you know, I have to, there's so many times I want to call and you know, if I could stick a revolver through the phone and blow somebody in the face, I would, but I can't. I got to call and go, hey man, what can we do to make this work a little better? You know, I got to play the nice guy.
Since you started up Short Bus Radio and it's become so large, obviously you said within a couple of years it was making you more than you were making in-house. But have you had to adjust yourself, though, you know, now that you're managing people, now that you're running the business? Do you find yourself, you know, not, you know, thinking, all right, I know, you know, this is how something should be, but I also know that I'm working with lots of people. And as you just said, dealing with lots of different big corporations. Have you had to make adjustments, or have you found that the way you are is what has helped at least to make Short Bus Radio as successful as it is?
Both. The way I am just helped make Short Bus, at least my input, you know, cause a lot of it lays at Joe and Paul's feet. They've done a ton.
Sure.
You know, we're equal. Me, you know, Paul always says, you know, they call me bring the thunder. When we have meetings, they go, dude, Mike's going to bring the thunder. Because, you know, when we have a meeting, we'll sit with Greg Strassel at CBS and they're like this, that, this and that. And then Paul look at me and then I lay in. And I'm like, look, man, here's how it works. You know? And people are just like, wow, you're passionate. I was like, hey man, I'm not gonna hold back, because one of these days I'm gonna be dead. I'm gonna be wishing I didn't hold back when I didn't want to. But where I've changed so much is, you know, I got guys who call me and they're like, hey, can you please go record Hee Haw and make something with this and with that? I know it's gonna sound kind of blah, but I'm like, I don't know who this guy is very well. I don't know what his situation is, and he just needs it. And my job, when I was with KZLA or K102 or the Eagle, I was imaging director. My brain was the image of that radio station. I had direct effect on it, man. That was my baby. My name was all over it. But with Short Bus, we're providing guys who their name is on the station. Our job is to be their production team. So when a guy says, man, I need this, I don't question him. I go, dude, I'll get it. Give me an hour or 30 minutes. I'll get it. Mm-hmm. And I get it for him. And if they say, hey, can you tweak this? I tweak it. I don't ask questions. I go, dude, absolutely. I will tweak it. I'll tweak it until I'm tweaked out, whatever you need. Because I want to make money, and B, that guy is trying to do what he wants with his radio station. My job is simply to give him the elements to get him there.
Yeah.
And that's a different job.
When Short Bus started, you already talked about it a little bit, and it ultimately became very successful, and you said you were making more than you were in-house. Early on, what were some of the things that you guys did? I mean, you say that there's three of you. Did all three of you start at the exact same time, or did you bring on a different partner later?
Actually, there were four partners originally. There was Paul Barr, Joe Edwards, Andre Zamparelli, and me. We were the four originals. Dre is still a shareholder, but he's not a participating member of Short Bus in any way anymore. But we all did the imaging. It was just us. And then, you know, as it started to grow, we started to have to add things. So we would buy material, and then we started to need to buy other things. So we started buying, you know, we'd know a guy who made good music beds. And, you know, a lot of it came from guys like you out there. Hey, man, this guy makes great music beds. Let's just buy a music bed from him, put some money in his pocket, make our lives easier. So, you know, as Short Bus started making money, you know, we really started to reinvest in it by hiring lots of guys, to the point where we are now, where we've got full producers working for us, you know, Eddie Bauer, Andy Safnauer, and we've really gone out of our comfort zone. The fact that, like, Andy is a very simple producer. When we first heard him, we thought, it's just kind of simple. But it was so simple and clean. All we could think is, man, classic country, AC, they love this stuff. And he's a good writer. So it stopped being such about us, and we made Short Bus more about its own service, and started hiring guys we thought added a lot. It didn't matter if they fit our criteria of what we thought would sound good or what good imaging was. We tried to get a spectrum of what everybody thought good stuff was. So we went and found different guys to make beds, different guys, you know, for CHR, for hip hop, for country. We found different producers, guys with whole different approaches to stuff, guys who made completely different kinds of sound effects. That way the service didn't sound so one-sided.
When you started out, the landscape of the subscription imaging services, especially on the barter side, was still pretty new. Tell me a little bit about that landscape, what you knew about it, and where you guys thought you were going to fit in at the time when you started. What were you going to be, and who were you really competing with?
Well, you know, we kind of wanted to be the nuts and bolts. You know, Frost, our real competitor, I mean, there was no Production Vault that I remember at the time. I think they might have started a little bit after us. Or if they did start before us, I don't even remember even hearing about them. It was Frostbites and Chase Cuts. And Eric had a very specific sound, and John had a very specific sound. And, you know, John has a short shelf life because his stuff is so imprinted that, you know, after a few times, you're like, okay, heard it. It has a quick burn, I think. Whereas our stuff tends to be more meat and potatoes. It's not so much flair. It's not so much wild and edgy. So you can just run it and run it and run it. It's just not going to wear on you too quick, you know? And now Chase was different, but he was really focused on CHR. And the thing about those two guys was they were very clear channel. And there was a whole nother market opened up, which was everybody else beside Clear Channel.
Now, tell me about the landscape now, because obviously there are more services. There are, I mean, that goes without saying. And the ownership of stations and the places in which you can have your services signed has changed, perhaps shrunk the number of places that you can go. But what are your thoughts on the landscape now?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of services out there. I mean, Production Vault came on gangbusters. Then you got Benstown, which I think it's a horrible product, dude. It's a horrible product. I'm going to be honest. I think it's terrible. But Splat, I haven't heard too much about. I think I've heard stuff that's not good. Then I've heard a few things that are good. So, but I haven't really ever focused on it. So I can't say that it's good or bad. You know, it's out there doing, it's making money. Benstown's making money. But you know, Frost and Chase always mainstays. They're doing their thing.
A service like Benstown, you know, they signed a relatively, well, it's a well-known fact now, but they're very much in bed with Cumulus. I don't believe that they're technically owned by Cumulus, but, you know, what are your thoughts? I don't know what you know about the deal they signed. I don't work with them. I used to, but I know nothing about them anymore. I don't have anything negative to say about them per se, but I'm just curious what you think about the deal that they got into with Cumulus.
Well, I do know what their deal is. First of all, the entire Cumulus chain was with Shortbus. We got a corporate deal through Dial Global. We were doing all the Cumulus stations, or, you know, that was our, they were our baby. I think we got like, almost 200 stations in one swoop. Cause they were given three choices. They were given, you can get a morning prep service, you could get an imaging service, you can get this. They had to pick one of the three, and a lot of them took us. When Cumulus swallowed up, what was it that you were with? You were with
the Citadel.
Citadel. They got their, you know, so they took Benstown. It's an 80-20 split. Benstown gets 20% of any Cumulus station that's handed to them because John Dickey says, I gave it to you. I get the money out of it. They only get 20%. I think they're upside down. I think they've got to be dying on the vine. There's no way if Cumulus gives you a station, they're going to keep 80% of the deal that you can make money because he had to hire producers and do all this stuff. And because he had to do it under that budget, he had to go get people who'd sell him sweepers for $5 or $10 a piece. I don't know about you, but I'm not buying a $5 sweeper. I've heard what they sound like. And so that deal is terrible. And we've had, since that Cumulus deal went away, we had easily 60, 70 Cumulus stations go, oh no, they were dying. They were calling us going, what can you do? What can you do? Can you help? Because my GM can't help. John Dickey said, sorry, nobody can do this. And finally, Stu Herrera at KLOS said, they asked him to be the classic rock format chief for Benstown. He listened to it and said, no. And he came to us and goes, what can you guys do? So luckily KLOS is big enough that they can say, we make money. We want to do what we want to do. And they got Shortbus back on the air.
That's good. I mean, those are those victories that, you know, you're not going to see as much anymore. But when you see them, then that must mean a lot.
Exactly right. It's just, you know, you have to have some clout. We have Clear Channel stations, but they're all major markets that can call their own shots. You know, but if corporate is pushing you around, you're going to swallow Premier pills. You're not going to get any Shortbus pills. And but you know, the Clear Channel stations we have, they make plenty of money. And when they make plenty of money, corporate doesn't bother you because they're not going to try and fix what ain't broke. So, you know, and listen, it comes down to taste. You know, Production Vault got pretty damn good product. You know, it usually always comes down to us or them. I rarely ever hear anything about John or Eric. Those guys are really all over Clear Channel. And we do have a lot of Clear Channel stations that carry both products, us and them. Our real competitor is Production Vault, and they
would be widely known as, I would say, if they're not the biggest, they'll be in the conversation of the biggest from anyone talking about services.
They're so, you know, it usually comes down to us or them. And you know, Bendstown was like, they were really bending, they were doing a lot of like, you know, buy this, we'll give you four services for free. And you know, we never did that. We're like, dude, you buy a service, you get a service, we're not going to give you a bunch of free stuff. You know, and now we've started to have to spiff stations to keep up with that sales model, because, you know, PDs or GMs who don't know the difference are going to buy the thing that gets them the most. They want quantity over quality sometimes, and you got to go fight that fight. So we spiff some stations to get them on. And, you know, I hate to be so blunt about Bendstown, but you know, I compare them to us. I compare them to Frost, Chase, and I compare them to Production Vault. I don't think they're even close. But I think I've heard Production Vault stuff, and you know, hey man, I had to go back and rethink shit. You know, I was like, guys, we got to rethink this shit.
Yeah. Then let me ask you this: since you're super plugged in and you have one of the larger services on, you know, you're the guy. People do have a lot of great things to say about Production Vault, and what do you think it is about them that make them so good? Are they spending a lot more money than everyone else, or do they have the right talent? I mean, you know, what is it that made them so good?
Well, I don't think first of all, they do have good talent, but I've heard a lot of bad things about the guys that run it. They're very crooked and shady, the two brothers that run this thing. Matter of fact, I heard they had a big fight and a blowout and have parted ways. One guy went Real World, one guy went Production Vault. But I heard it so second, third, fourth hand. I don't know what's what. But they have reached out and grabbed some good producers like Flounder down in San Diego, who's a really terrific producer and an even better writer. So I think they've grabbed some guys who are in pocket. They're actually in stations making stuff day to day. And when they pump stuff out, you know, it's very topical and very fresh. They're more topical than us. We try to pound out as much stuff as we can for stations that are burnt, what they're chewing through, IDs, new music intros, morning show intros, morning show sweepers, stuff like that. They do a lot of topical stuff. It's very fast burn. You can only run it for a day, but they tend to be very topical. And I've heard good writing on there. They've got some good writing. I can't say their effects are very good because their effects are not theirs. They buy Big Fish. Well, we hired Ian away from them. We now own Ian and we own Big Fish. So they can't have it anymore.
I can't speak to a lot of this, but I can also say you hired Ian away from me.
Yes, I know. I know. Sorry. I know. We hired him away from TM and from them. And that was for a reason.
And I like it. I like it, man. It was a good move. I couldn't do it. We're not big enough here. We have one service. I have one service. I'm not Production Vault or Short Bus by any stretch of the imagination. And I would have hired Ian away too if I could.
Yeah, we did it for two reasons. We did it, one, because we had so much Ian stuff and we love his effects. We think it's a nice marriage between what we do and what he does. And we really aimed it. Dude, you know me, I don't hold back. We aimed that hire at hitting you at 360 Country and at Production Vault. We thought, well, if we hire this guy, anybody's competing with us, we hit him hard. And when you're in business, you don't want to hurt people, but then again, you don't want to hurt yourself. So
it's show business, not show friends.
That's right.
I heard someone say that one time.
And so we figured, you know, and it has nothing to do with Ryan Dreen. It had to do with the fact that we were at CRS and Kirk Sterling was there. And I think Bo was there still there at the time. And we had an exclusivity deal and they were going to launch 360 Country. And we said, guys, that competes directly against us. They said, yeah, but you know, forgive us. And you know, we're like, what? You guys have an exclusivity deal. You're literally breaking the contract. And they just kind of like, first of all, they lied, said they weren't doing anything, but we knew you were. Well, so when Kirk made this little crack, he goes, hey man, he goes, you know, one time we tried to hire a guy and he was working with you and you guys kind of jumped our shit. So that whole thing about approaching somebody that you are working with, we'd like to get that out of the contract so that we can hire somebody to do something. And it, you know, even if you've used them. And we said, yeah, because we were like, we're going to totally steal Ian. The minute that contract is signed, we're going to get Ian. So he signed it. And we said, we called Ian that like next day and said, dude, leave Production Vault, leave 360 Country, leave anything TM, just come to us. And that's why we did that move. We made that move because it was a good marriage for us and we'd worked with him in the past and we didn't feel like it was fair to our clients to be able to get that same sound anywhere else. If you got Production Vault or Short Bus, you got the same effects. If you got 360 Country, you got the same effects. If you did this, you got the same effects. We're like, let's just make it only here can you get it.
So no, I love the candor for one thing, and it's cool. I think it's cool for people to hear this stuff.
I don't lie. I don't lie, dude. I don't lie to anybody. So I shoot straight.
I don't think. I'm gonna stay out of that one.
Go ahead. No, let's go there. Now that you want to stay out of it, I want to go in it.
Well, Bennstown, I think you're a little hard on them. I think their product isn't as bad as you say, and I also don't think. I don't know how bad the deal is for them because I didn't know those specs on it, but I don't think it's got to be as bad as you're saying it is.
Well, we heard it from our manager, Eric Weiss, how the deal went down with them and Cumulus. Yeah. Because.
But you really think that can make them upside down, a service like that?
Yeah, it did. We heard original numbers, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like. I forgot what they had to do. It was going to cost them something like $500,000 or something I'm trying to remember what the deal was. It was going to cost them like $500,000 to do all the things they needed to do. And they were only bringing in like 100 or 150 less than that. Like the deal started out with them upside down. They were going to spend more money to do it than they were going to make on it. Like that was a deal that was made.
Yeah.
In order, like, you know, I guess he went out, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. The guy that owns that thing. What's his name?
Chachi.
Talking about the deal Dave? He stepped out on a limb to get that deal because, you know, it's a brave thing because you have to get going. And when you get a big corporate deal, you find a way in the end to make it work. You just, you know, but as I understood, it was a very thin twig he stepped out on and that it was, you know, very lean. And I guess the reason I'm hard on them because now listen, it's been a while since I've heard their stuff. So I'll admit that. But when I heard this stuff like a year ago, I thought it was terrible. It was murky. It was terrible. And you know, Stu had sent me some stuff and I'm like, what is this? And I don't know who was making it and I don't know who they got working and maybe they've switched some guys. I just as a producer never thought it was quality. And you know, listen, I didn't hear all the formats. They may have good stuff on other formats. I heard classic rock and I heard, did I hear active rock? I can't remember what the other one I heard was. And I just wasn't blown away. I thought it was just kind of thrown together in a hurry. Now, granted, I heard this when they were just getting that Cumulus thing rolling. And, you know, I am not a mean, like, if somebody's good, I'll tell them, dude, you're good. There's lots of good producers out there who I compete with, they're way better than me. And I'll say, dude, you're the bomb, bro. You know, I'm sitting here getting my ass kicked and you know, I enjoy it. I like hearing somebody get out there and kick some ass. I just didn't hear anything on that, any of their demos or service that moved the needle for me at all. Not like when I listen to a Production Vault and, you know, I hear a few okay things, but then I'll hear like four or five things. So I'm like, Jesus, man, I wish I'd cut that. That's some slick shit. And
well, that's right. We don't have to focus on them too much.
No, that's okay.
I get it though, you know. But, you know, the landscape, really what I'm driving at here, and we can kind of round it out like this, the landscape has absolutely changed. And, you know, from what you started with to what you're competing with now, I guess, what are some of the things you do? You know, what's your prospects on the future? You know, how do you think things are going to shape out in radio, especially for imaging people, whether it be how these services are, the strength there or the weaknesses there, and then in station strengths and weaknesses?
I don't know how radio to me, it's interesting. I had a talk with Kirk. We had lunch with him out here and I said, I don't know, man. I don't know if radio is going to be doing anything really worth all of our time in 10 years. He goes, I don't think so. He goes, I worry about it. And, so I, you know, to be honest, you know, me, Paul, and Joe, and Short Bus, we've been working our way out of radio. We launched Sound Rehab Studios. Luckily, my neighbor is an executive at Fox, 20th Century Fox Studios. I didn't know this for like a year. And one day we were at the Trash Barrels talking, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, you know, we're having this issue with this sound." I went, "Oh, dude, we can fix that." And then it just blossomed. So we launched Sound Rehab Studios, which is sound restoration and sound removal. And it's going, it's starting to turn into something nice. It'll get us out of radio. We do want to stay in radio because I'll be honest, man, I love it. Guys like you, guys like Kirk, John Frost, Stu Herrera, Eric Chase, Josh Jensen. Man, I'm leaving so many people out. There's guys that are, I just love them. And I love them because they love what they do and it's what I do. And I like guys who are fired up about making something scream between two songs.
Yeah.
And
you're making an exit strategy. I hear that. But do you think it's going to be a 100% exit strategy, or are you just sort of making a contingency plan just in case? No. Or again, do you think it is definitely going to be an out? You will be out.
We're going to be out. It's an absolute 100% exit strategy.
What's going to happen to Short Bus Radio?
Short Bus will continue. We've got our little list of guys that we would say, "Guys, we're going this direction. We want to hire you and you will run the bus." We're going to let Short Bus run until the last guy says, "I don't want it anymore." And honestly, I think, you know, Production Vault does this, Benstown does this. I think that's what is the strengths are. You have a lot of producers working, and if something isn't working, you can just change producers and get that thing back up to snuff. So Short Bus has a lot of producers. We will eventually phase ourselves out. We phased ourselves out a pretty good amount. Bring in guys to run it, new producers to do the work who want to be part of that kind of machine, pay them well, and let the bus continue to go, and we'll go our direction. So, you know, we know who we like and we know where we want the bus to go, and we will always be involved with it and always try to fix what, you know, what's broke. But we're looking at, film and TV and getting ourselves completely out.
Yeah.
There's there's only one other thing that would keep us more in, and I can't tell you what it is.
The first thing you can't tell me.
I can't tell you what it is, but if it goes down, you're going to go, "Oh no." And, but we're working on something. And if that does go down, then we will definitely, we will be literally, jumping back into the radio pool heavy.
Can I guess?
You can guess.
But you won't affirm or deny no matter what I say.
I don't know. Let me see how I feel.
Are you going to be making a purchase as a company?
We're trying to make a purchase as a company.
Yeah. Okay. I have a pretty good idea. I don't think we need to go. Yeah. I'll bug you. I'll bug you on the phone and you can tell me later.
Okay. I think you know what it is. Well,
I have a pretty good feeling.
Yeah.
I'm savvy.
I guess, man, I do want to back up real quick before we, you know, whatever we do with this thing. I don't want to sit and body slam Benstown so hard because I, you know, obviously they got something going because people are picking them up. I think I hold the bar pretty high, you know, and I hold this bar to myself and I don't reach it a lot. You know, I luckily started in this business when the imaging explosion happened. I'm part of that MTV whiz bang boom static burst, clever little thing here that started. And, you know, it's the Eric Chases and the Dave Foxes and the John Frosts and the Keith Eubankses of the world that I really think those guys raised the bar so high, not so much as assembly guys, but concept. And I dig who they are as people. And I, you know, Dave Campbell, another one, I love what they do. And so, you know, when I hear imaging services and listen, Short Bus is the same, bro. Benstown, Production Vault, Short Bus, we're all in the same boat. Believe me, there's stuff I go back and listen to and go, "God, I can't believe I posted that. Dude, why did I post that? What was I doing? Man, I must have been tired." Yeah, I must have been tired. And it's just, you know, but when I listen to John Frost stuff, I never hear anything bad. I just go, "Dude, I laugh and laugh, and I have to stop listening because my face hurts." And when I listen to Eric Chase, I think this is a guy who you know, he's going into flat out TV production and he does all the, you know, Glenn Beck stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, I really feel like I'm listening to a guy who's just, people go, oh, you know, sometimes this stuff is not so good anymore. I don't think he's doing it. I think that guy is like, you know, it's almost like HAL, the robot that became self-aware and so much better than just a machine that it became no longer a machine, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's gone on to some like outer space kind of thing. And that radio is just something he does second nature when he's tired because he has to. If he didn't have to do it, he wouldn't. And so that's where my bar is, Ryan. I don't reach it often. I have my moments where I hit something really sweet, but I don't hit it like those guys do. And I'm glad they were my influences. I'm glad I can call them friends, you know. And
You got a little dark on me there, though, for radio's future.
I would like nothing more, and I'll say this for everybody who hears this podcast, man. I would like nothing more to, in 10, 20, 30 years, to see that radio has gotten an injection of new life.
Yeah, yeah.
I have all the faith in the world in music and all the faith in the world in creative people. I have no faith in corporations. I don't think the suits that run the business have any idea how to handle creative talent or how to develop creative ideas and creative talent and how to move it forward. I think they get stuck on their own deals and forget who they're dealing with. And I'll tell you about Short Bus. If there's anything I'll tell you, and I think Eddie Bauer probably would tell you to it to your face, and Ian would tell you, and all the other guys that work for us, we never lie. Whether it's good or bad, we don't cheat anybody. We pay good money for beds and sweepers. I mean, we pay guys $40 for a sweeper. They almost fall over. we find good people, pay them good, and keep ourselves above the boards. When we go down, when this thing's all done, we're going to have done it right, and we're not going to have any regrets or anybody saying we were bad people or that we lied or that we cheated. But in that token, that's where it's been our problem, the hill we have to climb in radio, is that we deal with so many people who aren't like that. It makes it hard to carry on business the way we like to do it.
Yeah.
And you know now that I'm very candid. I'm candid with Spencer Brown. I'm very candid with, you know, with Kirk Sterland and with David Landau and all the guys at Dial Global, with David Gropner and when he was there. I mean, we just told them straight up, because I don't want to ever hang up the phone and have them guessing what maybe I meant or what was I trying to say?
Yeah, dude. Right.
This is it. Right.
Well, that's cool, Mike. Man, we broke the time record of the interview, and I think I don't know about everyone who will listen to this, but I found it to be one of, if not the most interesting episode so far.
I got one story to drop off, to leave you off with.
Okay, leave us with whatever it is, it'll be good.
It's it's not an outrageous story, it's just that we talked about Ian, so I have to rat Ian out.
Okay.
We were at the Canadian Music Week in Toronto, and we'd never met Ian. We met him on a panel. So I think we got him the room. We got him a room or something. We got him a room. Yeah, he was running out of – he didn't have another room for a night. We got him a room at this Fair Oaks Hotel, like this really high-end hotel. We got him a room next to us. Ian goes in there for like – he takes his bag, and he's in there like 30 minutes, an hour. We go to get him to go out drinking. We go in, and there's shit everywhere. It looked like those two bombers put a pressure cooker with nails in his luggage and set it off. There was shit on the ceiling fan, on top of the armoire, over the lamp. I'm like, Ian, how do you unpack? How did you get a shirt on the armoire? How did you get a pair of jeans hanging over the lamp? He goes, oh, I was looking for a shirt. I go, do you just heave shit out while you're looking? He goes, I don't think, no. I'm like, what did you do? We couldn't believe it. It literally was like the ultimate nightmare teenager. You go in the room after a weekend when you're out of town, you come back, and that's what they did. It like, I was looking for like Jell-O or Dairy Queen malt on the wall. I'm like, dude, what did you do? So, you know, every time we think about Ian, we're like, dude, his wife. What must it be like? He's got three kids. What is his wife going through? His kids can't possibly be as bad as him. And he's the dad.
that's crazy. I was at his house in Dallas, and I have to say, I don't remember a mess whatsoever.
Really?
So she She had it. She must have had all four of them buttoned up when we came over there.
It looked like a tornado went through his room, bro.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was a long time ago, though. Maybe he's changed.
Maybe, but I tell you.
That's great, man. Well, Mike Madrigal, the one and only, shortbusradio.com. Everybody go check out all of their formats. Are you on Twitter a lot? I got your handle here. You on there a lot?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. Not so much lately, but I'll get on there more. It's Bus Rider Mike.
Yep, Bus Rider Mike, at Bus Rider Mike.
Yeah, and you can Facebook.
Do you have a Facebook? Do you have the special Facebook address, or to just search for your name?
You can look for my personal Facebook page, which is just Mike Madrigal. And anybody radio, I add them because I like having radio friends. And then have our Short Bus page, Short Bus Radio Inc. At Facebook. So you can find Short Bus there, and we're always posting weird stuff. And listen, anybody listening, call me. Email me. I answer all emails and all calls, and I don't think I'm better above anybody. I know I sound confident, but confidence in my work, but that doesn't mean I think I'm above anybody. So I really like hearing from all the people I went through my career with, and the people who are up and coming, and the people who've already moved on. It's good for me because I'm a fan of radio, and I'm a fan of anybody in it. So
yeah, that's cool. It's obvious that you are. You do great work over there. You've had an amazing career with some great stories. And really a lot of stuff that people can just be jealous of now because they're simply never going to get to experience what you did back in the heyday of radio imaging.
Well, you got to get an interview with Frost. Did you interview him yet?
Yeah, I've interviewed Frost. He had some, that was a good one.
I think he probably blew the money I made away.
Yeah, perhaps, but well, hey, Mike, I'm gonna let you go because I'm gonna cut this up into about 13 parts now.
Yeah, we'll just listen to it over the next century.
Yeah, nice. All right, Mike Madrigal.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, thanks again to Mike. Not much more for me to do here at the end except for to say thank you for tuning into the podcast. And also, if you did come and check out part two first, I do recommend you listen to part one. I'm assuming that if Mike piqued your interest, then you're already over there. You've probably just gone and turned me off and you're over to part one, and that's fine. But if you were thinking, all right, I don't want to hear any more from that guy, part one's a little different. Some fun stories about the various jobs that he had. He did a little more with, here's my bio. Yeah, then I worked there. It was, made it pretty interesting. So if you're into that and hearing, definitely one of the power players in the radio imaging world and how they got to where they are, highly recommend it. Also, if you're not aware, I honestly can't remember if we brought it up again in part two, but if you're not aware of what equipment Mike uses to produce, well, then you're going to want to go ahead and check out part one because it's pretty funny. So that's it. Again, at the beginning of part one, I told you all who is coming up. So just stay tuned to the podcast on iTunes or wherever podcatcher you use. Also on my website. And if you'd like to reach out to me or get on my mailing list, that's fine. There's a contact form on my site or ryandreen@gmail.com. And obviously on Facebook, facebook.com/prodpod. Or Twitter, @rdrean. That's @RDREAN. Love to hook up with you there as well. Okay, that's it for now. Bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan @ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.